Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today's episode, Kate has a broken nose, but we are also going to have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, the Marine Corps Commandant personally invites a MARSOC trailblazer to become an officer, but she wanted that sweet, sweet BD-214 more than a butter bar. Round number two, Miles Legos, the filmmaker and Marine who shot the documentary Combat Obscura, joins us to talk about the process of the film and the reaction that it's received. If you haven't listened to our Friday episode, Kate Kahns and I, we watched the documentary, we watched it live, and then came in and recorded our reactions. So I want you to listen to that if you haven't from the episode on Friday. Round number three, the Air Force should be the envy of all other branches for at least a moment. They're going to do a gender-neutral fitness test for every single airman. Next up, get rid of the age standards. We don't care if you're an old-ass staff NCO. Do the same shit as me, you fat, doughy bitch boy. Round number four, hotel workers were fired after posting a sign that said they'd no longer be serving military members or families at their hotel bar. Can we really blame them? A deep dive is needed, so we are going to provide that, and we're going to provide it all courtesy of our friends at SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets of every single type of live event. Whether you're catching up on your favorite musician on tour, shopping for the perfect gift, or searching for a last-minute deal to see your favorite team, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the biggest year, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action. I'm going to be close to the action at Hamilton. It's coming in May to San Antonio. I'm going to sneaky buy my daughter tickets, even though they are incredibly expensive. But with SeatGeek, I'm going to find the best deal at the best price. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every single ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Best of all, right now, our listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and earn the promo code CHAPS today. That's promo code CHAPS for $10 off your SeatGeek purchase. Huge episode today. We're excited, except for Kate. Kate just woke up. Kate has a broken nose. Kate is a shit show. One take all the way through. Goodness gracious.
Wow. That was beautifully done.
Not a single slip up. Kate, you know who you're reminding me of right now with the sunglasses inside?
Who?
Anna Wintour, the editor of Vogue.
Oh, the coolest lady around?
Yeah.
So I think we got to start the show, even though we have round one listed. Kate, Monday morning, I feel like this is company hours. Explain yourself and explain your face.
Okay. What had happened was,
Before you start, I'm just picturing this. Let me just set the scene. I'm just picturing this. I'm sitting at my desk. Chaps is in a chair, or we're in Chaps' office, and you come in looking like this, and you have to explain what happened. Go.
I'm standing at parade rest as I do this. I went out on Saturday night, and I didn't even plan on it. I had slept. I fell asleep watching Villanova game, and I had slept through. It was like 10:30, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try and go out. So I don't know why. My cousin was in town. I was like, you know what? I'll go out. I decided to catch up, and I'm like, I better drink up and catch up with them. So I had a bunch of wine pretty quickly, and then went dancing terribly. And then at the very end of the night, I was about to get in the lift and go home, and I saw the Dollar Pizza Slice sign shining like a beacon in the night. I said, I need to get myself a slice of pizza. Mm-hmm. So I go and wait in the long line, and I finally get my beautiful pepperoni slice, and it's on a paper plate.
Because he was like, good. Honestly, it looked good.
Yeah.
Just the right amount of grease.
It was. He said, do you want a box? I was like, no, I'm going to. I like made a little joke. I was like, buddy, it's not going to make it across the street. Ha ha. I'm going to eat it right away.
And it didn't.
It didn't. Because then I ran out and my friends were on the other side of the street. I'm like, I'm coming. Now, quick rewind. I've been wearing these little Keds sneakers, these high tops.
They're very cool.
They're very cool. And I've been refusing to tie them though, because they're high tops. Because if you tie them, then they're hard to take on and off. Mm-hmm. And you never know when you're going to need to kick them off for whatever reason. Are you going to a house with a fancy carpet? I don't know. So I keep them untied, but I tuck the laces down into the shoe. Well, I guess one of them had come out and I decided there was a taxi coming, but it was far enough away. I decided to sprint across the street holding the pizza and the paper plate underneath both of my hands. So I'm like cupping it in both hands as I run across the street. The one lace attaches to the little grommet of the other shoe, pulls tight, and I went down hard. Thank God the cab driver saw me and stopped, because I probably would be dead.
Were your friends in like that weird spot when somebody falls and you know they're like legit hurt, but you can't stop laughing? Is that where they're at? Because if they had a little bit of drinks in them and they saw you just fucking face plant, they're like, ooh, are you
all right?
They would have been if there hadn't been so much blood.
Yeah.
Because when I fell...
How did they not get it? Don't they know you're in the content biz? How did they not shoot your face bleeding?
There's got to be video camera. It was outside of a hotel, and I'm thinking that they have. I almost want to call them and see if they have a camera out there.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was on a block with a ton of bars, so a ton of people were outside, and there was $2 slice places, like alternate size. So there's like lines. Like everybody saw this. I'd say like many, many people saw. So when I fell, my instinct was to put my hands straight out to save the pizza. So
as opposed to bracing your fall, right?
Right. So there's not a scratch on my elbows or my wrists or my hands, because they went straight forward to hold
your face with your fall. Smart.
I broke the fall with my face. I went like nose down right onto the pavement. My teeth are all loose. They hurt.
That is bad.
Yeah.
When somebody hits their teeth or it's like a tooth injury, I feel so sorry for them. Like, I'd rather have a concussion. I'd rather break my arm than have something happen to my teeth. It's just so painful looking.
And oh, yeah.
Kate, at what point did you realize, shit, I think I broke my nose? Was it instantly?
Pretty much, yeah. I heard a crunch when I went down. Yeah. That's gross. But there, when I got up, there was so much blood. My hair was dripping blood. My hands were dripping. And I was like, I'm okay.
I imagine you, just knowing you, that your first instinct was to tell the ground that you're sorry. Oh, sorry.
I swear to God, I think the first thing I said was sorry to everybody who was waiting for me with the pizza. I was like, I'm sorry, guys.
What happened? So I was running across the street, chipped on my shoelaces, blah, blah, blah. Now I got a broken nose.
Yeah. The cab driver got out of the cab, and I don't know if he thought he hit me or what, but he was like, oh my God, are you okay? And I was like, oh yeah,
fine. I mean, you made a great point in your blog too, Kate. That's unheard of in New York City for the cab driver to get out of the cab and care at all about someone that is not owing them money.
Oh yeah, it was a whole scene. And I was wearing a t-shirt from Little Italy that said, fuck you, you fucking fuck, when it happened, so.
That's just poetic.
Yeah, it was the whole thing.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, hopefully you go. And Kate is also saying before we start recording that she's not even going to go get her nose fixed. What are you thinking? Like, you got to go get your nose fixed.
I have seen the videos of what they do. I'm not getting my nose rebroken. It's already like the size. Too. You guys laughed as soon as you saw me. It's huge. My nose is fucking enormous. It was already big as it was. I'm not about to go get it bigger. I just consider this, we're in the content biz. I got a little more character on my face now.
I wish I could fly up there to be in there when they break your nose again.
Speaking of biz, yeah, you kind of look like Biz Nasty now with his nose.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that. So
Biz Nasty. Love it. All right, let's move into the actual subjects of the day. The first one comes from military.com. The Commandant of the Marine Corps personally challenged a sergeant who made history last year when she reached a major training milestone to rethink leaving the service and instead consider a career as an officer. General Neller, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, called Sergeant Bailey Weiss the first female Marine to complete second phase of an intense selection process for special operators to encourage her to attend officer candidate school. The call followed military.com's story about Weiss after she completed the physically demanding course that no woman had done again. A spokesman for the Commandant said that Sergeant Weiss has a leadership grit and resolve to become a Marine officer. This is all about talent management, which I agree with. I think that if you identify people who go about, and now listen, I want to address the people who say, oh, what's the big deal? She's the first one to do it. The amount of courage that it takes to be the first to do anything is why it's a notable thing. That's why we celebrate Jackie Robinson's Day, because it's a big deal to be the first to do anything. That's why I think it's a big deal, right?
Break down a barrier. Absolutely. Especially in such a
huge amount of bravery.
Yeah, especially in such an environment that is just so male driven that the Marines are. So
it really, I mean, when you take the Marine Corps is already difficult enough because I think only 11 or 12% of all Marines are female. And then you go to the infantry, and then you go to MARSOC, and then you go to second phase of MARSOC. It's just a whole different paint job of the kind of people that are in there. So be willing to mix it up amongst those is exactly what they talked about, talent management.
You know what's weird? This had me thinking, never in my time in was any enlisted, some who were amazing leaders, never were they like tapped to, you know what, we need you as an officer. Your talent would be, I just find that weird now that I think about it, that that wasn't like more of a priority.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I think the enlisted side needs good leadership too. So what's the incentive other than money and rank? What's the incentive to switch over to the officer side?
Well, I mean, you make large scale differences. I think that there's a huge difference of being in command and being in a role of advising consent. Mm-hmm. Like I view like the enlisted side, if you want to break it down government style, where it's like we're like the House of Representatives, and the officer side is the executive branch. Like they're the ones making the decisions about what's going on, and we have mm-hmm. to advise and consent on how to actually do that. So you can make a larger scale difference, like for command structure, decision-wise, being on the officer side than the enlisted side. But I do think that that's the biggest issue in the modern day Marine Corps, and probably the Marine Corps or military-wide, is that there's so many young, capable people who get out and decide like to move on. And then you see a lot of the shit bags that move on into higher ranks. Now, that's certainly mm-hmm. not the case for everybody. There's obviously stellar Marines, stellar soldiers, stellar sailmen, whatever, all the way across the board that are in those E9, E8 positions. But we see a lot of people get stuck at the E7 spot that maybe weren't the best, but they're just sticking around for that paycheck.
Yeah, sticking around for that retirement. It happens all the time. You're right. And there's chaps, I would, and Kate, I would say that there's probably so many, and you guys probably knew some people who are just doing their short stint of service, 3 to 4 years, whatever may have you, and they just get out, and they would have had a ton of potential.
That's the same thing on the officer side. I knew plenty of officers who were great, like young captains, young first lieutenants who were great, and they're like, you know what, I did my thing, I'm going to get out.
Yeah. Speaking of getting out, how would you feel if you were Sergeant Weiss and you were dead set on getting out, and all of a sudden General Robert Neller is like, hey, you got to stay in? Like, man, he's not saying she has to, but like,
right. It's almost like no choice.
That's a lot of pressure.
It's just so much pressure. Like, what if she was all excited? She had a little plot of land. She was going to go farm beans or something. She was like, I'm ready for my new life. And then General Robert Neller is like, but wait.
But I think that that's a good thing that he does that, like that he went out and like tried to keep her in there. But if you're a young Marine and the Commandant of the Marine Corps shows up to your house or gives you a phone call, it does place a lot of pressure on her. I think that Neller should have went a step further. One thing that I think that we should do more freely is if he really understood that she had all of those capabilities, she's already shown that she has the physical strength to go through OCS and all those things. What other leadership challenges she's really going to know by going through the schools that she has? She knows how to place nine lines. She knows how to do all those things. Combat, promote her to second lieutenant right there on the spot. Say, if you'll stay there, I'll make you second lieutenant. He has the ability to do that.
Can they do that?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I thought that was like a World War II thing where
they could still do it.
Oh, shit.
They should do it.
I should have, when I was in, I should have hobnobbed with the higher ups more.
Same thing with like people who receive the Medal of Honor. I think if you've shown that level of courage and capability and leadership under fire, that they should give you, because we have so many people that get out. I mean, we've interviewed several people who get out of the military. Give them the opportunity to stay in and earn more and like do some more good. I think that would be great.
Yeah, chaps. I mean, I think you're kind of alluding to, you had a note in the sheet here that you would allow company commanders to have the ability to promote ranks under sergeant, which I think is a great idea. Maybe not necessarily commissions at that level.
No, definitely not commissions. I think that should be reserved for like hot, like 2 stars and above, like give somebody a commission.
But certainly I think that would be a heck of an incentive to keep people past their initial commitment if they felt like they could get, because I think that's what so many people get discouraged about the military is, you know, for some of the ranks, it is time, but you know, a lot of times if people thought if they really excelled, they could get promoted faster, Like the way that we promote people in the military is just such a antiquated process at this point, and I think it takes too long. So I think if you allowed for promotions to better reflect people's abilities and people's performance, I think you would do a better job of keeping people in the military a lot longer.
I mean, you constantly, we see people that are put in positions that are above their pay grade. I mean, I'll use myself for example. When I was an E5, I was a company gunny. That's an E7 position. So I'm working my ass off and working as hard as I possibly can, but I'm still getting paid as much as this shitbag sergeant who's not doing anything posting. Like, there's got to be more incentives. And that doesn't happen in the civilian world, really, nearly as much, where you have somebody who's really working hard. If you're working hard and you're performing, outperforming your peers, they're not going to be your peers for long. Like, you're going to be promoted out of that spot to a higher earning thing. The military should get on board and do that too. I think that colonels and below, or a colonel should have the ability to promote anybody to E7. And I think company commanders should be able to promote up to sergeant, like, just based on billets and things like that.
Yeah, because also too, like, they're the ones that are seeing them every day. They know what they're capable of, and they know what they've been doing, versus they just go stand before a board and they, you know, read off accomplishments on a piece of paper. They don't necessarily know the person as well.
I disagree with this.
Why?
Think of all the brown nosers you knew.
Oh,
imagine, I mean, you still the have brown nosing. I mean, you still have brown nosing. Much bigger brown nose than you know, Kate.
I have a red nose. I have a very red nose right now. Oh my God, it's you. Oh.
Kate, our nose expert. Oh, yeah.
I have a pair of sunglasses on for those who can't see, but when I lift them up, it's a very scary sight.
It is. All right, let's move into round two. All right, now Zero Blocks 30. We talked about it all last week. We did a full review with me, Kate, and Cons of the new documentary, Combat Obscura. We have the director, former Marine, Miles Lugosi. Miles, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So I have a couple questions just getting started, because I know, just so you know about our background a little bit, I'm a former Marine Staff Sergeant, Kate's a Marine Corporal. Whenever you were going on this incredible deployment, were you expecting everything that you got? Like, what did your training look like as a combat cameraman? Like, were you... how often were you firing weapons and things like that before you really got going?
Yeah, well, I mean, every, like, POG goes through MCT, which is basically, they don't really train you how to do anything but wait in lines for, like, days, it seems like. Actually, the one thing I did learn really well was how to, like, cook an MRE secretly, like, in my cargo pocket.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the main purpose of MCT.
Yeah,
I do machine guns and stuff, but it's all just, it's a mess. So
I think that that's what stuck out to me, is because I assumed that that was the case, because I know several combat cameramen. You were in a spot that you probably just had to think, what the hell? Like, I've done my normal table shooting where I, like, shoot the rifle range for qualification and then maybe done a little bit else, but people always assume that Marines are trained for that kind of combat. Do you feel like you were trained for that kind of combat, or just kind of thrown out to the wolves?
I mean, I don't think you can train for that kind of combat. You know, you can, I mean, even doing, like, pre-deployment training, I got kind of a glimpse of what SOI might've been like. I have no idea, but I mean, you basically, they put you out there and you just blow shit up. You're shooting at mountain ranges. You're shooting at, you know, it's almost it's like massive. It's almost like conventional warfare training, but for a mission that's essentially nation building. You know what I mean? Going out there and talking with the locals, like, that's something that Lance corporals below, that's we were doing the bulk of that work, which was just talking to people and interacting with them. And there was, like, zero training for that, you know, that went into, like, pre-deployment training and stuff like that. So I think we all kind of felt like we were just thrown out there, you know? I mean, you trusted the guys that had been deployed before you, and you basically just kind of followed their lead. But a lot of times they weren't really, you know, they weren't that sure either, so.
Right.
Yeah, and I was wondering, too, you don't get the same fellow POG here, obviously. You don't get the same training as the infantry guys. On my first deployment, I was attached to infantry. And at first, until I had to really work to get their trust and respect, how were you received? Because to them, I was just this attachment that didn't know what the fuck was going on, you know? And so you're more of a burden at first. How did you kind of win them over and especially get their trust to capture such intimate moments of their lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think they just recognized me as like a fellow crazy kid who just happened to have a camera. And I mean, I had a rifle and a camera, but going, like, I would go on 2 patrols a day. So like, you know how it goes, they go on patrol and then they come back and they do post.
Right.
Both. I was doing two patrols a day, doing post. I was doing all this other stuff. So it did like take a lot of time to kind of get their trust and show that you're not just, you know, a stupid pogue. And
you're, once they realize that you're not a pussy and you're able to do some stuff, right, like, all right, this guy's okay.
And also there's getting past that barrier where they're like, oh shit, combat camera, you're just gonna film us and not wearing our proper gear, and then we're gonna get in trouble because of you. But
so how do you go from that and worried about wearing proper gear to smoking hash and shit? Like, where they are just like, yeah, dude, go ahead, shoot it up.
It was really interesting because I knew a lot of guys from 1-6 that were actually – I was in boot camp with them. And because we were all the same – had all kind of gone in at the same time and were about to get out, like, as soon as we got back from that deployment. A lot of guys had already popped on the piss test and they were just waiting.
You know, wow.
A lot of these guys had been on multiple deployments and they were still Lance Corporals and they were pissed and they were done with the Marine Corps. And so like it was sort of an outlet for them to kind of like vent a lot of times, and just smoking hash and being on camera, I think, kind of added to that. You know, obviously didn't do it with, like, not everyone smoked and not everyone would be cool with that. But yeah, the guys that I was really close with, they were all into it.
Yeah.
We've noticed, and you said that you've been doing all these different rounds, and you mentioned before we started recording that there's been like a slant about the coverage. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think a lot of, like, on the left and the right, they just kind of dig into their trenches. Like, after they see the film, a lot of people on the left are like, imperialist occupation, you know, these fucking psychopaths that are out there killing innocent people, blah, blah, blah. And then on the right, it's like, wow, the sacrifice that these guys have to go through. And, you know, they dig further into that, which I think speaks to the kind of ambiguousness of the film, which is good. Mm-hmm. But I'd like it to be more kind of maybe holistic in the kind of reaction that, which it has gotten, that kind of just general, like, holy shit, this was America's longest war. And, you know, we're not really sure if we accomplished anything, but, you know, just, I kind of want to portray a general sense of the experience and the sadness of that, I think.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had any responsibility? Like, one thing that stuck out to me, and I mentioned it on our podcast last week, was that it was surprising to see actual Marines, like, wounded, because for a long time, we don't show that, you know, like, even as a combat cameraman, you know, we don't, I guess in a sort of sense, it's a propaganda effect on us, like, where we don't show Marines who were killed, we don't show Marines who are wounded or in the process of getting wounded. How did you come to the determination, like, people needed to see what was real?
I mean, it was probably the hardest decision of the film. I felt guilty for just having filmed it, you know, in the mm-hmm. first place. And then just to have that, this incredibly, upsetting, not just footage, but my memory on just sitting on my laptop and dealing with that and thinking, is this okay to show? It was definitely one of the hardest decisions that I've made. I went down to see his mom, Jacob Levy's mom. She lives in North Carolina. And so I went down there and, you know, we watched the film together. She had already seen, I'd already sent her some of the footage, and some of the guys that were out there had given her the footage because I had given it to them after it happened. Like, when I was filming it, the first thing they wanted to see when we got back was, like, even the guys that were there, they wanted to see the footage.
Right.
I think just to make sure, like, they did everything properly. Yeah. But also, like, in that moment, you sort of almost black out. Like, you don't remember it as clearly. You just, because you have this overwhelming emotion to get this guy on the helicopter. And so the first thing, like, they wanted to see the footage. I gave them the footage that ended up with her, and she was watching it, and she, I reached out to her and we set up a time to go down there and watch the whole movie together. And she was just struck by how proud of him she was. You know, I mean, she's like one of those super gold star moms that, you know, all the guys come see her every year to sell, like on the day that he died, they all come out to see her. And she genuinely felt like it honored him and was not exploitative, but was actually the opposite, which, you know, I was still surprised by, because I can still see how people would think, wow, this is really exploitative. But the other aspect of it is, like you said, we don't see this kind of stuff very often, except on like war porn sites, you know, like YouTube and Funker and all that stuff. You don't see it in a feature documentary. Like Restrepo, I think they show kind of that at the end when two or three guys get hit, and they only show the soldiers reacting to it, like crying and stuff and breaking down, which is really powerful.
Right.
You know, halfway through the film, there's this whole sequence of dead Afghan children, and they're up in their faces, and they're filming, you know, getting shots of these dead women and children. And it's just like, I don't know. If I'm going to show a dead Afghan, I'm going to show a dead Marine too. Like, I don't hold, in this conflict, we have to show both aspects. Like, you can't value one life more than the other, I think,
right?
Even if it's a soldier.
And I also found it interesting and wanted to get your thoughts on it, because a lot of time whenever you see a new documentary like this, there's a lot of editorialization that happens and people like interpret it a certain way. But I think some of what gets lost if you don't really focus on it is that you, as the director, watching somebody editor like do this to your film and talk about your film, this is your life too. How has the process been of seeing people talk about your life in like a film critique type of way?
I think it's great. I mean, like, I've been working on it for so long that I really wanted to do something different with the footage. Like, I spent a long time going around interviewing the guys in the footage and trying to make that kind of Restrepo-esque documentary. And it just felt like, it had already been done, but it also felt like I was trying to explain some of the stuff that was happening, you know, because I felt uncomfortable about some of the stuff that it shows, and I wanted to like provide context for that. But I realized by just having the experience, like having these juxtapositions and the chaos of it, you already get that impression, like from watching it, and letting the audience come to that on their own, I think is really important, like moving forward and understanding the war, instead of like the talking heads approach, which is just to explain this stuff and then have B-roll of footage. I want people to get a visceral feeling of what it's like.
Yeah. I also noticed, you know, you're talking about, you didn't want it to be a Restrepo, you know, that's its own thing. You were trying to do your own thing with it too and tell your own story with it. Your narrative, we noticed there's only one moment with an officer in the whole thing. And I don't think I saw anybody above, you know, the rank of corporal maybe the whole time. So, yeah. What was that on purpose or?
I don't know if it was my deployment, but I mean, you got the platoon leaders on the patrol base, you know, who's usually just lieutenant. Those were the only officers that we were with, and they didn't, not to shit on officers, but they didn't really go on patrol that much.
Yeah.
You guys are enlisted, so we're good. But they didn't really go on patrol too much with us. There were good officers and there's bad officers, obviously. Mm-hmm. For the most part, it's the 21-year-old Lance Corporal, who's a squad leader, who's been on two or three deployments and from, you know, bumsfuck Virginia or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And like in charge of all these guys' lives and ultimately talking with a group of locals who, there's such a cultural division, yet this kid is put in that situation to kind of, you know, try to
and showing like how much these fucking young people do. Like when I don't think people realize,
yeah,
like when the 21-year-old Lance Corporal is screaming out directives of where to locate fire, how to adjust fire, which position to move in, you're too high, get down off the berm, like giving those commands and having that wherewithal at 22, 23. I think that's a great thing for the American public to see, because you, when you're talking about young Marines very specifically, there's a lot of leadership that's there. And I think that a lot of the junior Marines, like, put aside all the, like the smoke and hash or whatever, the leadership that so many of them showed and just getting an objective accomplished. I mean, whatever, very specifically when they're putting out, putting your friend on the helicopter, it wasn't the first time that was easy. They had, that was work to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and like I've changed so much from that time, you know, like I feel like a lot of guys, like the guys that, one of the guys that had to blur his face was, you know, he was literally like, I just feel so disconnected and removed from that version of myself that I don't want that to be out there as who I am, because I'm not that person anymore.
Yeah.
I think that when you're that young, your brain hasn't even fully developed yet, and you're being put in the most extreme circumstances possible. So, like, yeah, I mean, we definitely try to capture that with the film.
And those guys, that have they all seen it? And do you still keep in contact with them? And how do they feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them, a lot of the main guys that are in the footage have seen it. I don't know, you know, there's 800 guys in the battalion, so I don't know if they've all seen it. But the guys that I know have seen it, and they're like, we had a panel discussion at the premiere, and two of the guys from the unit came, three of the guys actually. And, yeah, it's like, they recognize that it's a tough film, and it's, but it's also kind of important, we think.
Yeah.
You know, not to sort of, you know, hero worship, not like a lot, not documentaries don't tend to hero worship, but I think they tend to kind of just portray these kids as like everyday kids, just, you know, like they got put into a rough situation. But no, like a lot of the Marines that I was with, they wanted to be out there. Like we wanted to go to war. And we have to come to terms with that. Like we have to come to terms. I've been trying to come to terms with, why did I want to be out there in the first place, you know? And it's okay to question, I think, kids that are going down that path, you know, and understand why in the first place.
Have you found more that you've talked about it? Like the more that you like Monday morning quarterback to have like going through your old footage, coming up with the, what you wanted to put in, where did you think, I wish I would have done this differently or that differently?
Cause
I know my story whenever I got shot, like I replay it over in my head over and over again. What if I would have moved just a split second later, I could have been dead. Or if I would have moved a little bit faster, I would not got hit at all. Did you find yourself doing that watching the film? Like, damn, I wish I'd have done this instead of that.
Yeah. I mean, you can play it in your head over and over again. It's just like, but in that moment, you gotta recognize that you, like, combat is the embodiment of life's just not giving a fuck. Like not like,
there's just no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah. And like having footage like of me, of us getting blown up, like when I took shrapnel, and having this footage like on my camera is extremely like bizarre.
Right.
It's a real thing to like have to keep reliving over and over again. And while I was working on it, I just started getting like numb to the footage of Levy, the footage of other stuff. But then when it actually played at the first festival in Missouri, and like there was a whole audience there, it was a packed house, it was on this giant screen, I just like, I couldn't handle it, because it was like being there with all these people looking at these memories. It wasn't just like the content of it, but having a joint experience like that, it all just came kind of flooding back, you know? Yeah. And
I imagine that scene where you're sitting there and you just say, I'm scared. And that's got to be the most raw reaction that you could possibly have. And you're sharing that with the world. Like, that's one of the most intimate moments that you'll ever have in your life. And the entire world sees it in real time. And you watching that has got to be like so difficult to put out to the world, like that visceral reaction that you had.
Yeah. And I mean, you see me acting like a jackass a lot in the, like, behind the camera. And, you know, it's not just these other guys, it's me too. Like, I was one of them. And you, and just including that personal element of it and the role of the camera, like my role as a cameraman kind of influencing things at times, you know,
yeah.
Like telling guys, oh yeah, just repeat that. Or like, you know, like
right.
Trying to coach like them.
When you said, all right, now give me your real answer, because it, again, all the guys, like everybody has the canned answers. Like right, we knew when reporters came, like what we were supposed to say and like exactly what we're supposed to get across. And I like that you were able to get them to stop doing that and just be themselves.
Yeah. And I don't think that could have happened with a civilian reporter.
No. Yeah.
No, definitely not. Is there any moments that stick out to you that are surprising, like from as far as news coverage, where you thought, huh, I didn't think that they were going to report it this way, or the response from the Marine Corps itself?
I was surprised that the Marine Corps is not suing me.
Yeah.
That was surprising, because I was really expecting that to happen, because they, in the whole process of getting the film distributed and even just showing it places was difficult, and working with the Pentagon and with the Marine Corps, the whole thing was just very long and arduous. But yeah, I think ultimately, if the Marine Corps as an institution can not just look at this as some bad apples, you know, like, oh, these, like in their statement, that was kind of their stance, which is just like, these guys don't reflect the whole Marine Corps and blah, blah, blah. It was so, you know, they endangered the lives of everyone and yada, yada.
But I think every Marine watching is like, yes, they do. Like, that is.
They embody the Marine Corps perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah.
They.
Yeah. And it's not, everyone's war experience is different, but if the Marine Corps can acknowledge that, you know, this stuff is kind of bred in, you know, at a very early stage, like in, even in boot camp, you know, getting told that you're going to go kill Hajis and stuff, and just this kill centric. I mean, you're training kids to kill. So it's, I mean, like, it's understandable, but yeah. Don't act like you're these, like the Marine Corps is these Boy Scouts that are just out there to, you know, live up to the highest standards and blah, blah, blah. It's like, come on, man. Like, just be open, be honest about it. And don't, you know, don't try to, I don't know.
Right.
Brush it under the rug.
Well, I also was just curious. So you went through Columbia University. I don't know if you're still there, but that's where you linked up with a civilian who helped you make the film. Was it helpful to have a non-military person as the extra eyes on it?
Oh, it was like totally, I mean, I couldn't have done it without him, because I hadn't, like, there were so many, he went through all my footage in like a week. He's like a super, all he does is work, you know, and he's always on his computer. And, he was like, I showed him the rough cut that I had, which had the interviews with the guys now in the present. And he was like, I like these interviews. They're really great, but I want to see more of the footage. And he went through and he started pulling stuff out that I had just kind of like normalized as a Marine. Like, oh, well, that's not interesting. It's just, those are just them goofing around or fucking off. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, this stuff is really interesting. And having that civilian perspective, because I think it's like, we don't just get like a you know, the immediate slant about the troops. But there's also an aspect to it where, you know, they're kind of lumped into two categories, like villain or hero, or victim.
I agree. And I think that we've talked about that so many times, because I think the American public wants every single deployment be like a Toby Keith song where it's like American girls, American guys. But in reality, like most people want to hear the stories about you pissing out of a Humvee going 45 miles an hour down a dirt road. Like that's what they want to see. That's what they find interesting. And Marines do too. So if you're a Marine, soldier, sailor, or airman listening and you haven't seen Combat Obscura, make sure you check it out. Miles, thank you. What, Kate?
Yeah, I just had one quick thing. Miles, after we talked about it on the show last week, I got a bunch of people DMing me who had been with 1-6 and in that area at the time asking, should I watch it? Like they were almost afraid to watch it because I think it was, we had said how it kind of takes you right there. You feel like you're right back in it. It's, there's so much about it that you really feel. But I just want to tell you the one guy said, I'm glad I watched it and it allowed my wife to see some of what I dealt with and why I am how I am now. So he said, sent me a few screenshots too of his friends who were there who were saying the same thing, that this film has helped them. It's the closest they could get to finally explaining what it was like. So I think that's a really powerful thing about this film too. So really job well done. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us, Miles. We really appreciate it, man. And if they want to follow you on Twitter, Instagram, or anything like that, where can they find the documentary?
It's you can just go to iTunes or Amazon. It's playing in a few theaters still in Texas, I think, and some other places. So make sure you go to combatobscura.com and check out the list of theaters that it's still in.
There we go. All right. Thanks, Miles.
Thanks again to Miles for coming on the show. We appreciate him coming on. And the next X-Men that we're going to have is going to be presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. If you're doing difficult tasks, you need people who are smart enough to do those tasks well. That's a place that you're going to use ZipRecruiter because ZipRecruiter is going to find you the people to fit the job feelings that you have. ZipRecruiter sends your jobs over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find out people with the right experience to invite them to apply to your jobs. As applicants come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one of the spotlights, the top candidates, so you never miss a match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on a ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free at ZipRecruiter.com/zero. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ZERO. ZipRecruiter.com/Zulu, Echo, Romeo, Oscar. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. If you need somebody to fill your job post, go to ZipRecruiter.com/zero today. I have some praise for the Air Force. This is going to be round three. The Air Force, first branch of service. Sometimes the Air Force does things right.
They just
flat out do. This is one of those times. The Air Force is developing a new service and a new formula that it hopes will provide an accurate measure of fitness versus fatness. Kate, first of all, how do you feel that the Air Force is fat shaming people?
You know what? We're all beautiful butterflies. I don't understand it.
Except for that fat chunker butt I saw at the hospital a couple weeks ago. He was not beautiful at all.
Well, what does this mean? They're measuring. So it's a gender neutral fitness test for all airmen.
Thank you for asking, Kate. I'm about to explain it. The new formula will measure an airman's aerobic fitness test against their body composition to come up with a fitness score. The chief of the Air Force Exercise Science Unit said, I think it's hilarious, first of all, that the Air Force has an exercise science unit. They said that.
I'm also not surprised, though.
No, I'm not. You guys probably have one, too. Honestly, all the big, fat,
they probably all do. Of the
government have it.
Probably.
I mean, you guys got some weirdo jobs too. I see some titles from the Army and the Air Force. I'm like, man, this is like a university, like veterinarian, all kinds of shit. It's great.
Yeah.
So Bumgarner said that the military's focus on weight loss is a failed approach and one that we need to get away from. I agree with that. I think that the way that we approach fat bodies in the military is probably antiquated and we need to do a better job of finding healthy options. Because they'll just say, I mean, how many times have you guys seen somebody's very close to making weight? They're like 8-10 pounds to making weight, where you'll see somebody who's like a company first sergeant or a company commander, but like go to the gym, sit in the sauna, sweat it out to get
it. Yes. Just sweat out that water weight.
That's so dangerous, man.
If they would do like what wrestlers, basically before a weigh-in, it looked like you were in a wrestling team because so many of them would be doing all the crazy shit that wrestlers do to try and just make weight. And then as soon as they made weight, they're like, all right, back to normal me.
Yeah,
like it wasn't something maintained.
And so then they would also just tell him, just don't eat.
As a yeah, don't eat. Like you go in and see, do you see the meat in like McDonald's and shit like that? They get in trouble. Or shout out PFC winner. Winner would have fucking Dr. Pepper or his
Camelback. Yeah.
Outrageous. So Bumgarner, this is what they want to do though. They want to measure an airman's VO2 max score, a fitness standard that measures the maximum amount of oxygen a person can use while exercising intently, while running and making sure that the numerator in the formula. For example, he said that somebody running a mile and a half in 10 minutes and 23 seconds could have a VO2 max score of 50, which is more on the more fit end of the scale. For the denominator, he suggested the Air Force divide the airman's weight circumference by his height. An airman in that hypothetical situation who had a 35-inch waist and was 70 inches tall would end up with a denominator of 0.5 and a VO2 max score of 50 in the numerator, and the denominator of the 0.5 would result in the score. Who in the
what, is dude?
Understanding that?
That's just what? A little too complicated.
Like, that's where the Air Force missed the boat, dude. Just have a standard, not some weird old oxygen number. Like, who does that? I mean, who goes to the gym and be like, bro, your oxygen number. What are you dealing with on your denominator?
Am I understanding this correctly? So if you are a bigger person, your standards are lower? You can get the same score as someone else, but
that's the key. Okay. No one is ever going to know what this means.
Right. That's
like, that's
point.
Why I like it. If you go to, if the Air Force just came out, they were so on the right track. And I think it's because they're trying to get over the whole Space Force thing. Like that the Space Force is going to be a different branch of service, that they're just trying to move past it. Dude, just make it a standard. Just say that if you run this fast, this is your score. If you do this many sit-ups, this is your score. If you do this many crunches, if you swim, you bike, whatever standard you want to have, just make the standard the same for everybody right. across the board. Because in reality, I don't give a fuck if you're 350 pounds if you can still do the physical standard.
Like, exactly.
It's not about being fat. Like, I don't like the fatness and the way that it makes it uniform. But it's the physical standard part. Who cares? I mean, you have somebody that like Vince Wilfork. Vince Wilfork, he can play on my team any day. Vince
yeah, Wilfork absolutely.
A great, great machine gunner.
That is
no, you're right. You're right.
You but take I mean, VO2 max score in the numerator and a denominator, and you divide
gonna,
the two. Like, what?
You're yeah, going to no, break your brain. Okay. You're going to break your brain trying okay. to figure this out. And again, no one else.
Can I say something else? I think this is classic Air Force. Like, this is a roundabout way for them to say to the rest of the branches, look at us. We do math.
Yeah.
Like, you know, get over yourselves.
You're just going to have people in their blue on blue or whatever fucking colors they wear out there for their PT tests, just out there with calculators crunching the numbers. I'm going to throw up when I see it. I'm just like, this is gross. This
I wouldn't be crazy. Surprised to see an abacus out there, honestly. Look at us. We use ancient tools.
No shock the Air Force would be using that stuff. But no, Chaps, I mean, you make such a great point. Like we said all the time, like when we're talking about females, you're welcome, females in the military, and we don't care if as long as you could just do the job. It's the same thing here. I think back, one of my best sergeants, well, he was a specialist made sergeant. Anyway, he was overweight. But like when we're out on missions, nothing would ever stop him or slow him down or anything. And it ultimately didn't matter what his body looked like or what his APFT score was, because I knew he was getting the job done. So as long as you can score well on the APFT or whatever test the branch of the service that you serve in has, I don't really care what you look like, so long as you look okay in your uniform too.
What I like to imagine those bubbas who are like 15, 20 pounds, a little bit too chunky before mm-hmm. they go on a deployment, I like to imagine them as a spry little young brown bear that is getting ready for the long winter, and they're just putting on a little extra poundage to get through a long deployment. Because I've seen pictures of me when I went at like 190 and I came back at 150, 145, 150. Not great. I wish I would have had a couple other pounds.
If I could go back in time and get my Marine Corps body, like I had a slight, like it wasn't a six pack, but there was packs there. And dude, I had
there was stuff going on.
I had those great Madonna arms. Oh my God. I wish I could go back in time.
All right, before we move on to the last round of the day, if you heard me and Cons giggling about the Dr. Pepper story with PFC Winter, here's a little flashback to episode 17, early stages, so the audio quality might not be as good, but listen back to this story. It's one of my favorite ones.
Dude, the amount of drink when they go home,
Just rage.
And,
yeah. I like that.
And you're not really that out of shape. You're out of your shape and your standards. Because the difference between going home and binge drinking and coming back and trying to do pull-ups whenever you used to do 20, and you're supposed to do 20 because that's your perfect score, and then you come back and do 16 pull-ups is still pretty fucking good. You're still in pretty good shape. But it's a whole 20 points off. And 20 points for the military or 20 points for Marines, for example, could end up costing you a promotion for 4 months if you're 20 points off of your fitness score. That happened to a kid that I had that I actually went to boot camp with, and then we went to Japan together. And it's one of my favorite post-holiday break stories of all time. This bitch leaves Japan knowing that the day that he gets back, he's going to have to take a fitness test. His name is Winter. I'm going to even out his name. His name is his last name was Winter, like the season Winter.
Okay.
Winter always was basically like pizza dough that put on a camouflage uniform, like soft as fuck, just a pudgy little dude who was one of the guys that would join the Marine Corps to try to prove like that they weren't as pussy as everybody said that they were. But in reality, he really was. And it's okay. Like, you don't have to be that guy. So Winter came back from break. And you could just tell when he got off the plane and walked into the barracks, he hadn't shaved, which is a no-go. You better be shaved and be ready to go whenever you walk back into your room because you're going to see your sergeants and shit like that. You need to be shaved the moment you get off the plane. It's a long flight. Take your ass to the bathroom. Be ready to go and shave. So Winter walks in and they're like, hey, dude, tomorrow, 0530, out at the PT field. And he's like, okay. He knows that he has been on the fat boy program before, like for the guys that are out. He wasn't fat. He was just like dad bod city, but he was just weak. So he goes out there knowing that they've been he was supposed to be monitoring his diet, doing all those little things that you're supposed to do to take care of yourself whenever you're gone. Has on his camo pack. Good to go, man. Like, proud of you. You're going to be hydrated. You're running 3 miles. You need to get some good liquid in you. And then we see it. He takes a little sip after he does his sit-ups. And he does like 65. You're supposed to do 100. Those should be guaranteed points where you get 100 crunches. Should be almost automatic that you do them. He does like 65. The minimum was like 62. He takes a sip, and it's brown. The shit coming up the start is brown. And I'm like, first knowing him, I'm thinking, is he drinking dirty water? Is Winter drinking dirty water? This motherfucker had Dr. Pepper in his camel bag while he's PT.
Come on.
And was that so on purpose or left over?
Yes. I opened it and I'm like, Winter, what the fuck is this, dude? He's like, hey, Corporal, it's Dr. Pepper. And this gunny, who is like, if you picture Marine Corps gunny, like basically like Arleigh Ermey in Full Metal Jacket, it's like he had satellite dishes as ears, and it just like honed in on it from across the football field.
Fucking Winter.
And he was just like, who the fuck is that? And Winter's like, it's PFC Winter. We went to boot camp. I was already 2 ranks ahead of him, and he was still a PFC. And he graduated boot camp as a PFC, so it was still the same rank. Shitbird City. The gunny was so irate that he told one of my other buddies, Chris Diaz, who was killed later in Afghanistan, Chris, or Corporal Diaz, go to the fucking store, buy me as many Dr. Peppers as your little Dick Skinners can handle, and run them back here. So he was making this motherfucker funnel all this Dr. Pepper just over and over and over, like, fill it back up. And then he was starting. Then he made him run. He's like, this is not your PFT. You're going to do your PFT next week because I'm going to save you. But I'm going to teach you a lesson that you'll never forget today. So he has a gut full of Dr. Pepper after being home for leave. And he is running around. And when the carbon dioxide or whatever the fuck it is inside that makes it fizzy finally reaches its breaking point, it was like Old Faithful went off in Okinawa. I'm talking like it was like a 25-foot projectile Dr. Pepper foam of vomit.
What a sight.
It was amazing, man.
That's fantastic.
And Winter was like throwing up all this foam like through every orifice in his face and crying. And the gunny's just like, why the fuck are you crying, Winter? And he's like, it's so much Dr. Pepper, Gunny. It's so much Dr. Pepper, Gunny. And he's like, Corporal, running back to the barracks, which is a good 500 yards away. He's like, and if he stops saying it's so much Dr. Pepper, Gunny, all the way back to this motherfucker, give him some more. And so we're just like, roger that. Oh, so gosh. He's running back, screaming it's so much Dr. Pepper, Gunny, at the top of his lungs on like January 3rd at 5:45 in the morning in Okinawa with the rising sun. It was beautiful, and it's a moment that I will never, never forget.
I'm sure he won't either.
You can hear the happiness in my voice. I love it when junior Marines are in pain. It makes me so happy even now.
I can tell you are a sick fuck. You just
you are.
It comes from Colorado Springs. I had just almost like
oh,
a
little, is that Colorado.
Love, true love. It's that blessed arrangement. All right. It comes from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Two employees of a Double Tree by Hilton, Colorado Springs, were fired the day after they stopped serving alcohol to a group of veterans and their family celebrating their return from the deployment. The employees made a sign stating, quote, no longer serving military personnel and their guests, and posted that motherfucker right at the hotel bar. Both employees who posted the note were fired the next day, according to a Facebook post from the hotel. Justin James said, these men and women were being honored for serving their country. There was no reason to treat us this way. James also stated that 600 people paid $50 apiece to pay an expensive prices of drinks and food taken from their tables if they went to the restroom. Then the sign went up. They came and shut down all of our traditions and treated us like crap. He says with an exclamation point. The hotel management agreed. In an updated response, the general manager wrote, two supervisory level employees who have since been terminated made poor decisions, including displaying a sign that they created, which we found very offensive. Their actions do not reflect upon our principles or beliefs, and this is not how we train our employees. We deeply regret any offense to the service members and their guests, and have implemented a training for our employees to ensure that this does not happen again. We are honored and proud to support our military community and their beliefs. Honestly, I can see it getting so rowdy. If you got all those people getting rowdy, where the two people who are actually there dealing with all these drunk service members coming back from a deployment who haven't drank in months, I can see you being like, fuck that and fuck
that. Yeah, because
there's nothing worse
than being sober and dealing with drunk people.
Wait, nowhere in the story does it say that they were being a pain in the ass, though. Like, nowhere in the story does it say they were being rowdy or awful or terrible or anything like that. Like, and it says it was a huge thing, 600 people paying $50 a piece to be there. And it just didn't.
I mean, I'm sure they didn't do it because everybody was being as polite as Mr. Rogers. I'm sure that's not what happened. You can read between the lines a little bit that some people had to be belligerent. You don't just shut down service just because, especially in Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs is a huge military town. These people had to be being assholes.
I don't know. I just feel like, but
I don't know. I would have a hard time believing they would make that sign without being prompted in some way.
I would also say that even if they did, though, that sign, you had to know that, like, take a picture of that. That's going to go viral. They said they're not letting military veterans have their drinks at the Hilton Double Tree. I just feel like that's the kind of thing that you know better. And that's where I would go to higher management and be like, look, these newly returned vets are out of control. Like, what do we do?
Dude, I've been at mess nights and balls where I wish I could put up the sign at the ball that said no more military members will be served alcohol at any point because so many people are belligerent. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. But I'm sure people are crazy.
This too, it's a 600-person event. Have enough people to help manage that then, to help keep it under control.
Yeah, you gotta have the wherewithal to know that, all right, people coming back from a deployment, haven't been drinking alcohol, there's a good chance that things might get a little out of hand. So, yeah, let's have the personnel on hand to deal with this should this get a little sideways, which
all I'm saying is
it's going to.
Our newly returned military veterans can do no wrong, and they should have been allowed to drink and break their noses to their heart's content and do as they
please. I also think that they could have served themselves a little bit of favor if they added one word. They only had to add one word to that sign. tonight.
What?
If they just said tonight, oh, yeah, like we're closing down the bar, like things are getting out of hand, we're closing down tonight. Than not saying like no longer, because that's like in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Perpetuity. There we go.
That is hilarious.
No, Chaps, you're right. It could have just been for the night. Yeah, like just shut down the bar. Like, hey, like, oh, sorry, we ran out of alcohol. Or hey, we have to shut down early tonight. Our manager said so.
I mean, it could be, you do have the right as an employee of a bar to be like, we're going to cut you off, or just cut those people off who did it. Either way, I'm sure that it was to put that sign out again. You have to be going through the shit.
Oh, yeah. I would like to see the security footage. Yes, I would. Yeah.
And just getting back from an appointment makes it even worse because nobody has drank in a long time. Everybody's time went on. And young service members are some of the most annoying motherfuckers in the world whenever they are drunk.
Oh, yeah.
This is true. Very true.
They just and you get a few of them together and then just any sort of judgment goes out the window because then they just keep egging each other on and then it just continues to get worse.
Yeah.
Well, that story the other week, Cons, where your buddy, like, well, your sergeant was out drinking and he was he jumped up and ran. How many times did you guys have to like go corral and find somebody? And, like, it is a giant pain in the dick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I understand where the members of the DoubleTree are coming from, but the put that sign up is a little bit too far.
I'm going to put the sign up next time Kate goes to a dollar pizza place.
Yeah.
Like, do not serve it to military veterans or their families or just Kate Mannion. Be on the lookout.
Picture of her face with her nose all banged up.
Do not serve this woman, no matter what. All right, let's move on to save rounds and alibis. I don't want to get into a lot because it's all over the news. You would think that when the Mueller report drops, that people would finally shut the fuck up about it. That's just not the case. Like, it's the coverage on both sides of the political aisle is just so fucking annoying. Mm-hmm. I mean, it clearly says no collusion. I think no collusion with Russia. That's fantastic news for the country. Like, right. There was no collusion with Russia, but then it also says it does not completely exonerate him of obstruction of justice. So then why in the world is the White House tweeting out that it's a total and complete exoneration? It says it even in the 4-page document. No one's seen the entire report, but the Washington Times or Washington Post, LA Times, New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, every single person is giving all of their thoughts about what's going on in the Mueller report when no one really has any fucking idea what it says at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. At this point, it's just so tired. I got to imagine these people at all these major networks, don't they get tired of talking about the same stuff over and over and trying to find new angles about the same tired topics? They must. So at this point, the report has come out and just move on. You know, just as they say on the internet, find a new slant.
Well, and I don't think they're going to move on until they actually find, like, see the report, like a 4-page summary. Like, anybody can summarize something. You want to see what's actually in the report, which I understand that. I'm just saying either way that it's completely clear some of anything. If you don't like President Trump, you don't like President Trump, and you don't need Bob Mueller to tell you the reason why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole thing was strange. I think the whole thing that it was going to be was so built up that when it finally happened, it's like when you tell your friend, like, you're going somewhere and it's going to be awesome. And then you get there and it kind of sucks a little bit. So you're like razzled. You got to like still make it try and like desperately try and make it a good time. Mm-hmm. I think it was so built up that when it finally came out and it was like a dud, you're like, hey, look at this. Like they're just trying to make something of it was kind of a nothing
thing. There was a tweet that went pretty viral that was about it. And it said, could you imagine if Bob Mueller like waited until he dropped the report to indict like all the people, like all the 17 people or whoever who've been indicted and like convicted along the way, that would have been Twitter might have broke if they had all those people in the command staff like get indicted all at the same time. But I don't want to dwell on, there's a reason why we've made a conscious effort on this show to avoid talking about politics because it's fucking exhausting. And it really feels like this Mueller report really feels like when Lost ended or The Sopranos ended and it's supposed to be a series finale, but it just brings on so much conversation about what does it mean? What does it mean? Let's just stop. Yeah. We needed to address it, I think.
Sure.
Any other save rounds?
Kate,
Hmm.
listen, if you ultimately decide you need to go to a doctor and have your nose reset, I will go with you and hold your hand if you want.
Thank you. Thanks, buddy.
Because I can imagine that is a little scary to say, like, hey, come break my nose.
Especially because I would be doing that at the VA.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You probably have a better chance just having, like, Biz do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, I guess my only save round is that I hope this nose swelling goes down. Because, like, I already have, like, kind of a schnoz on me. And right now it's, like, mega schnoz. I'm, like, nervous to ride the subway and be in public today because it's so big. Oh, what a freak show.
I have one for Kate. I just want to hear you breathe out of your nose into the mic. That's... It doesn't feel like that's full airway, but it'll work.
Yeah,
we'll be back on Friday with another episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you then. Sound the retreat.